Hello, and welcome to the Tiny Plastic People podcast. This is a special podcast in this case, where we do something we've not really done before. In the middle of 2022, James and myself decided that we wanted to run another one of our less standard wargaming events, and decided also to record something of a little podcast documentary about it. This is That Story. And finally, episode 5, Q&A episode, where we bring together some of the things that we've been asked about following the event itself. Join us now, edging around tangents. Hello, good evening, and welcome to the hinted at Tiny Plastic People adjacent Age of Sigmar 28 questions podcast. Joining me tonight, as with the other ones of these podcasts, is James. Hello, James.
Hello. How are you doing?
I wondered if you were just going to wave then, because you waved for a very long time before saying
I started waving and then I realised I had to make noises as well.
I suppose if you waved very vigorously, then you could have not used words. Anyway.
Yep.
As I'd hinted there, this is hinted by saying expressly, this is listeners and attendees questions for the AOS 28 event that we ran increasingly 2 months ago now. Yes, two months ago.
It's August now.
Yes, feels like a long time.
It was in June.
So the answers to these questions are going to be, let's not say forgotten, they're going to be matured, nicely mellowed, steeped in a brandy barrel.
Finally aged.
Yes, aged, exactly. So
as we all are.
As we all, yes. I mean, I just steeped in everything. Paint fumes is usually what gives me my flavour. So I'm just having a quick read through the questions, whether there's a good order.
I put them in no order, so
yes,
you know, that's fun.
Should
we say that this is off the back of me having listened to the podcast that we actually recorded and you not having done that yet?
Yes. So. Well, I don't think I have very good answers for quite a lot of these. So you're now just doubly well informed and I am singularly not at all informed. Let's start in a random order then. Non-caveman Dan asks, and I think we've partially answered this in a previous podcast.
You're going to say that about all of them because we actually have, but also we haven't. So
okay. Yes. I see the point. But anyway, not to repeat ourselves. The question is, how much of the end state of the narrative did you plan for? I.e., these are the factions. It could swing this way. Here's an interesting end game. And how much did you let emerge from the games across the weekend?
Do you want me to start or do you want to?
Don't have a lot to say about it, so I'll let you start.
Cool. Okay. How much was planned for the end state? What did we plan for? Let's go with that bit first of all. Not much of it at all. The hardest thing in the run-up to the event was figuring out how many games which we would have. So, if you are ever running a thing, and I think we'll do this in the context of if you are running an event as well, rather than just like, and what we did. So
that is the non-oneristic way of presenting this podcast. So
yes, if one is doing this thing. So it was over a weekend, and Sundays tend to be one, you want a shorter day because people want to go home at the end of that.
That is true.
They tend to have car journeys to make, or they want to get back to the hotel, or they're knackered. Because if you've done, usually you will arrive on the Friday, or a lot of people will arrive on a Friday, and then they will stay over, and then they'll have games all through the Saturday, and they'll all be very excited. And then you'll usually do something on the Saturday night, like usually drink a few too many beers and eat too much Chinese food. And then the Sunday will be the recovery day from that, and you're playing games. So with that said, we kind of knew that that would happen, I guess, because I've been to events before, and that seems to be the way of things. And that meant planning for, on the Saturday, more games, and on the Sunday, more relaxed games, but also wanting to have a conclusion. So we kind of knew that we were going to have a conclusion, but how that conclusion would be shaped, we didn't know. I didn't quite know. So we talked about on the last episode about how like everyone was given cards with contracts and things. And we had quite a deck of these. We had 100 of them. And it wasn't clear to me how quickly people would actually get through them, which was why there were 100 of them, basically. It was the idea of let's plan as many things as possible to actually happen. So we've got too much stuff and see how it goes. And we almost ran out of them. So that last game, which we had planned, and we kind of had it in inkling that we wanted to finish on something big. And it was good that Tom G was very much banging the drum for we must have this big thing at the end. And it was kind of like, well, okay, let's clean up and get people back into the game on the Sunday. Of like, okay, this is how we're playing the game again. Let's get used to it again. And let's have a quick game of like the, like find, clean up your contracts and things. And then we will figure out from the state of play, which we'd set up, like what the final narrative would be. So we discussed it as game runners, like what that would be. And that gave us kind of like a fitting conclusion to the whole thing. So that's how much we planned for it, in that we winged it pretty much.
Yes. I think, yeah, we're talking about advice in the context of advice to other people. The limited amount I would say on this is, and this isn't just specifically about this event, this is just my event running experience in general. And that's not just sort of wargaming events. Yeah, you want to have some kind of plan, but you also want to have the capacity to be flexible, because any kind of situation where you want to give the choice, and you know, and things are changeable, then yeah, unless you write a lot of content in advance and then pick from that, you're gonna limit yourself. Yeah, you're gonna need to have the flexibility there so you aren't limiting yourself. But I wouldn't say for everyone that winging it is ideal. just, you know, you can definitely muck things up winging it. And I think we were lucky that we had a whole load of runners who were very experienced in running games and knew the kind of pace things would go.
Yeah, and I would say that we also, there was definitely a shape to the event that allowed a narrative to happen, and that narrative could be working on the tabletop. So, like, what is your Warbands narrative? And I felt, and I've read back on the feedback, that people did feel that their Warbands themselves went on a journey throughout the games, and like they had to do a little bit of work, which I think was probably one of the things which we would try and improve, to kind of say, well, why are we all here? Why am I fighting them in particular at this point? We didn't have that much room for grudge matches or matching people together based on like shared needs or shared adversaries and things. Yeah. We didn't have that much time for that.
Certainly a challenge. You can do it. It depends on your narrative as well. Sometimes it's much more obvious than others.
Yeah. And I felt that the like the culmination of it was, if the players, and this was the other thing, is that we didn't bring that much, I think I mentioned it in the last podcast, but we didn't bring players much attention to what was actually happening on the contracts boards. We kind of expected them to just pay attention to it. And those who didn't really see the tracks moving up and down. But
yeah, there's definitely a way you can tie that into rules and things, but the price you pay for doing that is decreased complexity, so...
Yeah. But, yeah, I think we gave ourselves enough maneuvering rules, particularly around the way the factions worked, that ultimately the factions would have kind of come to a head, and that was kind of what was going to be played out in the end. So while I'm saying we winged it, the structure allowed us to wing it, and like the context of those things happening was kind of the thing that was made up on the fly.
Yeah, you have a foundation put in place and a load of building bricks that you then produced the winged solution from. It isn't just purely creating something abstract at the last minute.
The other question in there was, how much did you let emerge from the games across the weekend? And I'm just going to stop my cat from going in between the blinds behind me. So that's going to be exciting audio. Tofu, you absolutely...
I'll answer whilst you're cat wrestling then. And again, maybe I'm going to give him a very generic answer here, but I certainly work with the philosophy that the narrative as you, the game runner, write it, is the weather. And then the actual emergent narrative, the actual core narrative, are the stories the players tell. And the weather happens to and around them. But the actual story is what they do in that space. I don't think that is entirely the way other people run various things. I mean, I know for a fact it isn't how people run things, but that's certainly always been my philosophy.
No, I think that kind of rings true. And allowing people to choose what missions they wanted to do, contracts, etc. Allowing them to engage with the games. Like, I had a few notes, again, going back through the feedback, were that some people really liked talking through things with their opponents, particularly when they were in like the one-on-one games, where they would sometimes actually settle things without having a dice roll. And whereas in other games, people actually enjoyed the rules, actually allowed them to come up with new missions on the fly and then just play out the game and just see what their missions were about. So that was generally like quite a nice situation that we got into, where players could. And I feel that like that's risky when you're playing. Like, we were lucky that we were playing with a lot of friends, basically. People who we knew, people who we talk to quite regularly, or at least are aware of, and we've got shared values and vibes. That helps a lot of things. If this was a paid for event, I think people would have been a little bit more critical of it in certain ways. And if I were charging money for it, I would have also made it more structured as well. So that emergent narrative probably could have been there, but I think there probably would have been a lot more like, right, you've got five games to sort this out, and a lot more like rigidity to like, you've got to finish your game now.
Yeah.
And tell me what happened and report in on this form so I can help digest it.
Yeah, it's very true. There's a lot I could say in regard to that. I don't want to just go off on a tangent. But yeah, it depends on what your interests are. And there's certainly different ways of running a tight experience. I mean, you say that, you know, people paying for things. Everyone pays for events in time. And
money. We did charge for it.
Well, a little bit to cover costs. But, I mean, everyone puts time and money in for travelling. The runners put time and money in. The volunteers put time and money in on travelling. And, you know, just prep time and things. So, yeah, it's a funny one. I don't want to go on a tangent and talk about games in general. I keep edging around it. And then I also feel there's like the separate topic, which is sort of how social contracts and things affect wargaming, which I probably just need the big spin-off wank cast where I talk about the nonsense.
Oh my god, you talked about edging and wanking on this, and we've already got a podcast feed called about rimming on our feed right now. So,
well, geez, it's got to talk about what people are interested in. So,
well, it whatever gets the clickbait in.
Really. That's it. So. Yes.
All those thirsty war gamers.
I'm going to change topic, because otherwise I will just go off on a mad tangent. because yeah, that's entirely what interests me, and it doesn't interest anyone
you could
else.
Do the, you know what, apparently my favorite phrase is essentially, and let's put a pin in that.
Okay.
So, you know, let's put a pin in that essentially, and yeah, we'll carry on.
Oh, this is the other thing, which is editing yourself is awful. Yeah. Okay, speaking of editing yourself, here's a totally different topic. Riz asks, what were your biggest influences, and did you have a specific idea that you wanted to accomplish? I can probably answer to some degree.
You can start then.
First.
As the rules meister, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Actually, that's thrown it. Yeah. I've forgotten that rules exist, and I could actually talk about this question from a rules point of view. Okay, I'll do that.
And talk about it from every direction. Go on.
I mean, the easy answer for aesthetic, to me, it became very... I just wanted it to be very Bloodborne, because it's a weird city, and I like weird cities, and I like being Bloodborne adjacent. And I took, personally, quite a lot of cues from that that aren't directly like, oh, I just copied a Bloodborne... But the element that storytelling can come not from just stated, you know, narrative hooks. Oh, you're in a spooky world. You know, a lot can come from item descriptions and things and contract descriptions and stuff. You can get this sort of immersive kind of storytelling coming from within the game design. And then, so yeah, talking about game design, again, on the rules writing side, yeah, I wanted a system that was both very easy to pick up and easy to play quick games with, but also to some degree represented the narrative moats that we wanted to cover. And this probably is quite divergent from Bloodborne, because your bands here are bands of sort of heroes and... hirelings, I suppose, is the way to call them. And I certainly wanted the feel to be that this, and this is different again from Ink 28, is that it's Age of Sigmar, and the two things I went into it wanting is that heroes were heroes, and that's heroes in a, you know, literal rule sense, that you have picked a hero for your warband and they will do X, Y, and Z, and also sort of heroes just in general in how they're kind of going to be acting. Yeah, it should feel bigger than what's adjacent to them, and they are part of that narrative. You know, it's part of the sort of general Age of Sigmariness, yeah, of the world. And you know, that's quite different from, say, Necromunda, where you could very easily have a gang leader being sort of cheap shotted turn one by the most rubbish small person. So yeah, I wanted to sort of move away from that, and definitely to bake into the rules that heroes were different from hirelings. And
yeah, to bounce off the Bloodborne comparison, I think you kind of almost had it was almost like the inverse of the Bloodborne experience. There was no like single hunter moving through the world. What was almost given to the players was the opportunity to be the big horrible one banging at the door, and then the horrible folk who were just surrounding it standing still, only you were in control of them. So you were kind of almost the NPCs of that world in some ways.
Yes.
Which I quite...
Yeah.
That's kind of how it shook out anyway, with the way the warband rules was, like, you'd have like quite a hard, immovable brute, and then some very squishy folk who could basically do very little apart from like achieve objectives.
I don't want to sell the scum short. They definitely could do things, but yeah, they could do less, and
yeah,
maybe had to be more careful about how they did stuff. So
I definitely feel the Bloodborne vibe was definitely high on my list of things, because who doesn't love Bloodborne when you get into it? Like the whole eldritch vampire weird night thing. It was the buildings and the terrain that I made, and the boards and things were kind of inspired by that.
Yeah.
I
mean, the game itself was, I mean, that's I've just missed it. The what's the biggest influence? The biggest influence is that it's the sea, and it was a game set about water. And to me, the sea is always very much an unknown thing. I mean, to use a very kind of like poetic and artsy term, there are the sea willies, and the sea willies are to me very real. There's a sort of, you know, the water is mysterious, and what is going on beneath the surface of the water? Is it seaweed or is it a weird fish?
Is it a big horrible whale?
Is it a big horrible whale? Yes. And
or is it the Meg 2?
I hope not. Those films make me so angry. It's the Tiny Plastic People film rant, spin-off podcast. Yes. So yeah, the sea, I think, was to me very much a driving thing. The sea, everything in the sea is awful. There's no flipper, there's no Echo the Dolphin, nothing in the sea is nice. It's just all weird fish and slimy things, and humans don't belong there.
I do love the idea of, and I don't think we actually got enough chance to kind of explore things like the abyssal depths of the ocean. I mean, there's good reasons to not go down there, as some people found out recently. But
I was going to say, you can't do a spin-off submarine-based influences.
Who cares? They're billionaires. That was kind of something which we could have probably tapped into more, maybe. But again, like the whole having the sea as a functional part of the game, as a way to base your missions, a way to like kind of like there's everything about the sea can kind of come across quite dirty if you do it in the right way.
It washes like up things a lot like of stinky stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, like. Seaweed is stinky. Like flotsam is a great word which you can use all the time. Seagulls are horrible.
They'll steal all your chips. Yeah,
exactly. Like algae and like just creeping slimes and things and pulverized rocks and shells that sound weird. All this kind of stuff is inspiring things, like just things covered in barnacles is like a great thing. It rusts everything. It's like dank and it's waterlogged all the time. All of those things are like great. Great setting for a game. And boats are good as well. And places near the sea where you've got that whole... I was just thinking about like there's a Time Splitters level where you go through and you kill all of these like weird fishermen and things, but that's in loads of video games and things.
Yeah, there is something the recent very game unheimlich about. We're gonna have to show that we have a massive anti-sea bias, but like people who live with the sea and as part of their livelihood and things, I feel like it's very easy to cast an unheimlich air on them that, you know, they go out and what do they do when they're out at sea? It's confusing.
They just come back.
Yeah, they just come back and do things. Yeah,
but they're changed.
Yeah, but are they changed? Exactly. No, the answer is they're not. I mean...
But that, like that to me. And the game Dredge came out probably a little bit before we ran the event as well, and I played all the way through that, and
I don't
that was
know
great.
What that is,
sort of, so. It's a fishing game,
okay,
where you drive around a little boat, but it's also Cthulhu,
right?
And there's just horrible horrors in the deep, and it taps into all those things, but in quite a cute way. And when darkness falls, everyone goes mad, so that's fun. So some of the visual influences like wonky houses and thing, that's all kind of from software. Bloodborne, just everything being the same color as well. One of the tables which I made was meant to be like a ship's graveyard, and that came from the game Below. I was literally playing this game Below, which is by the same people who made Sword and Sorcery for the iPad like years ago.
I don't know what that game is either, so I don't know what any of these things are.
Oh, jeez, come on, Drew. Get with the platform. Anyway, it's like a run-around top-down roguelike-y game, but it's got this one bit where you go through a ship's grave, like a graveyard of boats washed up in shallow water, but then they're ruined. And that was like another little bit of inspo there. And then game-wise, I looked at a lot of TTRPGs and things. So I looked at Mokbore, is how you're supposed to pronounce it, and Pirates Bore came out while we were developing our ideas, which is a pirate-based version of that. Forbidden Psalm is the skirmish version, which sits on top of the Mokbore rules, so that allows for a bit of roleplay and skirmish, and people run whole events based on that. We looked at Mordheim, we looked at Necromunda, obviously. Those two were very big influences. I know you looked at Saga because we played Saga recently.
Saga
was like, oh, this is where you got all of
your animals. Mechanically had certain... I would have had it more because I really like the mechanics of Saga, but... That was certainly an engagement thing, which is probably less influence. So it wasn't influence, but it's like, you know, I'm a big fan of people's rules supporting the narrative of their particular groups. And Saga does that very well, that your individual units have almost the same stats. I say almost, Saga fans will correct me, but the majority of Saga factions have just the same units. And it's only your special abilities that change how they behave. So yeah, that's certainly I like that as a way of doing stuff. So it isn't just a totally different faction. Each faction or each, you know, tons and tons of rules. It's like small amount of base rules and then complexity as a sort of separate part of it.
Yeah, trying to think of other things that influence, like Soulbound was another thing. So like things like items, like at the end, like towards the end of the process, like when we were going through items and missions and things, I was just pouring through any books which I could get my hands on and just like say, that's a good idea, let's do that, and just rewrite it a little bit so it fits. So like items and things, I definitely used some things from like the Griffin's Saddlebag, which is a D&D like compilation of items, and just like changed a few things about them to make sure that they fit our needs. Mission wise, this is going to make everyone want to hate me, I stuck it into a ChatGPT and just see what came out of that, and then rewrote it all based on what it would come up with.
When the Terminator murders us all, it's now officially your fault, James. And
To go to bat for using things as jumping off points for ideas. And if you're stuck for ideas, getting a load of jumping off points are always a good thing. If it's bloody, what's it called? The cards which like Brian Eno and David Bowie used to use, the oblique strategies, that's what they're called. Those cards for being creative, or asking something like, give me 20 ideas for pirate based skirmish missions. Anything like that will get you on the way to creating things which are more suitable than the thing that gave you those ideas. So
I'm going to segue us at this point and very neatly ask you a question that John's asked, which is, what was your favourite piece of lore? And, well, I say and, he's written and, so I say and or magic artifact each.
That means you have to answer as well, though.
It does. I have an answer.
Ooh.
I know they had other answers closer to the time, because there were some missions I wrote and I was like, I really like this mission. And the missions were kind of lore-based, because they were just all nasty. It's like, I like writing slightly unpleasant, weird stuff. And there was quite a few magic items that I wrote that were just sort of weird and a bit grim, and sort of very kind of wet and squishy. I'm going to answer by not answering and say that the favourite thing I wrote was an ability, and it was for Riz's warband, who were kind of weird slug people who maybe had stayed a little bit too close to the sea, and they had a ability on their sort of leader who was a kind of weird, slightly more kind of like cult leadery figure, but it just drew everyone. I think it was called like the Law of the Deep or Law of the Waves, and it just meant that anyone within a certain distance must move towards water of a kind of a random amount. And I just felt it really encapsulates things I like in narrative game design, that it isn't just a mega combo that's do X more damage or do things sort of differently. It's something that is strange and is unpleasant and potentially kind of takes everyone down to a terrible watery end. But maybe that's what your forces, your warband want. They aren't just about winning, and they aren't just about who has got 10 most victory points and things. I think that, in a sort of narrative sense, is thing I really like.
Yeah, I'm thinking one of my favourite things was one of the missions which you would sacrifice things to the trees of the island. And when you did, it would make all the trees pull everyone towards them. So if you're near to a tree and you failed a morale check, everyone kind of became... It was a way to, like, move everyone on the board suddenly. So if you... And, like, the mission is to run up and, like, sacrifice someone to a tree, like, on the foot of the tree. It doesn't matter who, just anything. Just kill something next to the tree. It could be yourself, could be anything. And then when that happened, everyone would have, like, if there were lots of trees... Like, everyone would get pulled towards the trees suddenly, like, by, like, the trees being, like, horrible, hungry spirits which wail. I liked that as a mechanic, just as, like, I think we've talked about it before on the thing, but just things to get people moving around, because we were quite worried that people would just kind of stick to objectives and just walk in, get an objective, and then leave again.
Yeah, you do need something that complicates matters. It's always useful.
Yeah. And anything that forced people, like, I pull you towards me and you fall in the sea, and I jump on this thing, and then when I ring this bell, everyone runs away, or something like that. Things like that really helped. And the other thing was just on the top of my mind. It wasn't a magical artifact. It was the lore that I talked to Riz about when we met up beforehand, and it was something along the lines of, like, yeah, there's actually a police state here, or, like, there are marshals, and they're not actually very nice, and they're kind of crap, and they're just bad at their job. So it was kind of a little bit like all cops are bad going on at the same time, but they're also organized enough to be trying to take over, like, the city, because they don't think people can rule themselves, so they're just like, well, we're gonna step up and rule them then. So that was, like, one of my favorite threads, and that was a thread that went through quite a lot of the actual narrative, was that the more unrest that was happening, the more the marshals were actually taking power, because, you know, clamped down on unruly citizens. Mm-hmm. Really. So that was, like, my favorite thing that played out in the lore, due to just, like, a few number adjustments and things on the tables. So, yeah.
Sounds good. On a similar vibe, Scops asked the opposite, or sort of the opposite. She asked three questions. So I'm going to do quick fire with these three questions. So short answers, I think.
Okay.
So which mechanic or lore thing are you most sad that you weren't able to fit into the event?
I couldn't figure out how to get tarot card readings in. Mm-hmm. I wanted to. And also listening back to some of the previous podcasts, I didn't find a way to kiss the shopkeeper.
Valid. No, I don't remember any shopkeepers being kissed. So
I know. How about you?
There's lots of rules stuff. But none of them I was sad to see go, because I think it is important to, you know, you've got to always be in a position where you can get rid of stuff that you like. I don't have an answer. I don't have an answer that's fair. I've got sort of crap answers. I'll give my crap answer, which is the thing that I'm always sad to not see in these kind of events, and this is very much of an artsy, wanky thing of mine, is that I'd love to do an event with a style guide and a kind of common aesthetic. Keep it broad, but, you know, people work, because there's always a sort of, you know, there's a divergence about how people interpret different things, you know, particularly in a world that already exists like 40K or Age of Sigmar and things. There's very much a some tonal variation, you know, and we've shown our colours here that we're both kind of very grim and grimy about it, and some of the warbands probably diverge from that. But this is why I say it's unfair, because I don't want to say that I'm invalidating anyone else's choices, but yeah, you know, if there's anything I feel I'm sad about, it's probably that.
Yeah, I can see where that comes from. I personally, I literally don't agree. I think just letting people go with something is enough, and particularly because of the way we approached it as, you know, allowing people to drive the event and the ideas for the event, particularly early on. It's kind of like you got to let it go.
I totally recognise that. I mean, like I say, I think it's an unfair thing to say, but I just want my entire life to be like an art book, and you know, we just do the Dune, and like every game and battle is just a beautiful set piece that we then read some dialogue over and things, and you know,
it just wail over with them.
At which point is it a game, or is it just some sort of weird art happening? And it's like, I am this sort of frustrated kind of artist wanker all the time, and yeah, I mean, it's stupid to
it's kind of the thing where you think, I would love to dictate the basing for everything, so all everyone's bases match.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Because that's like one of those things where you could say, actually, if that happened, it kind of unites all the models anyway. It doesn't really matter who painted them or like how they made them. If the bases are the same, it's a way to do it. But also, I'm not going to do that.
Maybe I'll do it on my own with no one else.
Maybe.
This was not a short answer. This is, again, just going off into the wank zone. Anyway, sex question.
sex questions. Oh, tell me more.
I had to search for something in work today, which was a valve, which is a name was something S-E-X, and it set off all my work's content filters. So hopefully IT don't come and ask me any questions. Anyway, the next question has already been asked, so which was your favourite narrative moment of the event? Is there anything we've not talked about?
I think like my favourite narrative moment of the event, of the games which I saw, I really enjoyed the group which had the Everything Pie mission, because that was just like a lot of people just having fun around a table all together, just doing something silly. That was good. And also because I'd written the mission knowing that that was a very silly mission, and that it went to the lengths that it did was good. Was fun. And I think narratively I enjoyed that someone, Joseph, kind of glommed on to some of the, like, I'm going to do all of the Queen's missions, and did nearly all of them, which allowed us to have like a more ongoing narrative that involved like the Queen, which is like a big factor in like the planning of the event and the narrative which we'd written going forward. So that was, because that was engaged with, that kind of helped the whole structure of the end game be what it was. So I think that
I don't think I have an answer for this. I didn't see a lot of games in continuity because, certainly on the start of the days, I was doing a lot of rules support, and it didn't put me into a place where I was able to sort of watch and observe very much. I thought the end games looked aesthetically very pleasing, but I don't know if that's a fair answer to a narrative thing. So, yeah, no, I don't think I have an answer. So moving on to question 3 from Scops. Again, it's kind of like the entire, alleged point of these podcasts is, what tip would you give to someone else organizing a narrative event? I think I want to sum someone up in a sort of unhelpful way as my answer for this, which is, there are a lot of ways to do narrative events, and there are no fixed rules. There is no single way to do narrative, and narrative can mean a lot of different things. So the most important thing I think that you need doing any narrative event is an understanding, communication and buy-in, or some combination of those, with your players, to make sure that everyone is aware going into the event what kind of experience people are expecting to have and what kind of experience you are expected to present to other players as well. Because narrative can be a lot of things, and there isn't a single right answer. So communication of what the intent is the most important thing, I think.
Yeah, I don't think I would disagree with that at all, because that was pretty much going to be what I said. I think what I would add to that is, know your limits of what you can do as a person planning an event, because you will burn out doing it, almost guaranteed. So almost plan accordingly to those things. Like, what is it physically possible for you to do as a human with a life, with a job? Unless your job is putting on narrative events. But even then, you've only got so much time in your day, and then you've got other things which you probably want to be doing. And it's okay to ask for help on things. It's good to ask for help, but when you're planning, it's very good to build a community of people around you just to have ideas and bounce ideas off, because some people will just tell you that the thing that you're thinking about is not worth thinking about, or is too complex, or not complex enough, or doesn't quite fit with what the things which you said earlier. So interacting with people keeps you humble and on track. Communicate with your players, like Drew, you said, that's really important, to just keep communicating. I think that we could have done more on that personally. Like, if I was going into this again, I would probably set up a comms plan ahead of, like, and having that kind of, like, early on, we had a lot of excitement, like, and going back and editing the podcasts, which we've been doing, going back and listening to, like, how we planned and things. We did a lot of planning and we did a lot of communicating to build, because we didn't really know what people wanted, so we had to do a lot of work that way. But as soon as we knew roughly what was going to be, like, as soon as we had the setting down, as soon as we had, like, the lore of the area down, as soon as we had, like, the factions and the islands and things, that was our point where we actually probably could have communicated sooner about what it is we were actually going to do, even with no rules, even with anything else. Mm-hmm. And we could have done that bit sooner. But what actually happened was we were all busy with our lives, and, like, there is a big time jump in between, like, two of the episodes of the planning podcast.
Don't have a reason. That's really helpful. Yeah. It's like, don't do anything else in existence and just...
But that doesn't mean, like, a narrative event isn't just a skirmish narrative event. We kind of bit off a really big thing to try and do. Whereas other narrative events could just be, we just want to play Age of Sigmar and fight over this thing and, like, let everyone create an army, which is fun, and engage with it on, like, the silly aspects of, like, AOS and, like, the things which can be, like, overblown and, like, radically fun and stuff like that. There's so much scope within that. Or you could play, I guess you could even play, like, Underworlds narratively, or Warcry narratively, or Kill Team, or any of these other games out there which have already got some rules set in place, and then you just have to work on the missions and things around that. And if that's your bag, do that. But I think with the dark Age of Sigmar and the Ink 28, there is almost an expectation of, like, bespokeness to it, And that's fine. That's great. That's fun. That's what I love about those things. And yeah, just know what you're committing to early on and then plan ahead. I would book a venue further ahead as well. I would fix a date in time further ahead than we did
this
time.
Yeah, it does give you a hard point to work against, doesn't it, then? That's always
motivator. Yeah, without the deadline, nothing was really getting further. People were still umming and ahhing about things, and it was just like, no, actually, there's a deadline over there.
Mm-hmm.
Decide on what that is. And that gives everything more structure as well. And probably would get more commitment from players earlier on if they know exactly what date they're going for, because we're out of a pandemic-ish, I guess. And that was a big thing for us as well, was that we were kind of planning it in the tail end of it. And what's happened is that there's lots of social events going on, and not just like Warhammer and gaming things, yeah, but like life events going on for people. People are going on holiday again. People are excited to go outside and like connect with nature, I guess. I know, horrible.
Oh, actually, nature's not bad. It's connect with people is what I object to. So
but there's a lot of pressures on people's time. So having a time, almost like a save the date. I got a save the date for a wedding, and it's like for next year sometime. And I was just like, oh, that's far ahead. And then I realised that, oh yeah, that's how you make sure people go.
I mean, anyway, it depends on weddings. You can sort of blackmail people into going to, but wargaming events is harder too, because it's people will book other things. Yeah, I don't know. That's probably just sort of a general thing, isn't it?
That wasn't one tip. That was a lot of tips.
That was a lot of tips. It does even say tip singular. Yeah.
Yeah, it just says what tip. Shit.
Sorry, oh well, stops. Just forget everything we've said then, and just pick one thing out.
And pick one thing.
Anyway, the final question, and I don't know how, I feel like I should say you have to answer this without any context being given, but I'll leave that entirely up to you, James. And this is also your responsibility as well. So why did you let the Squig Pope die? Asks John, and in brackets as a follow-up question, does the Squig Pope go in the everything pie?
Easy to answer. The second one, yes. Of course, the Squig Pope goes in the everything pie, because everything goes in the everything pie. And why did we let the Squig Pope die? I would say to John, why did you get the Squig Pope killed?
That's a good point, yeah. We've just discussed how it's all player choice, and you know,
he didn't have to put the Squig Pope where the Squig Pope was, and there was quite a vendetta against the Squig Pope once the Squig Pope was on the table, so maybe he needed a Squig Pope mobile.
Maybe.
I have one last question for you, Drew.
Okay.
Would you do it again? I think we've answered this before. But
we
would
have.
You now? 'Cause this, yeah.
Well, actually, we asked, what would you do next time? But would I do it again?
Oh, with the assumption of doing it again.
Yes. I think, I mean, this. Now, if I was doing this specific event again, yes, because I'd like to see what you could do differently. And obviously a different group of players would do things differently. We'd obviously have to change a load of stuff to make it stressful and hard to organise. But, yeah.
Good.
That's would you good. Do it again?
I think I would.
That's a question to ask on Sunday afternoon of the event, is would you do this again?
Yeah, as you're just cackling in the corner. No, one thing I found was because I'm currently pulling together all of the materials, and I've still been doing this off and on for the last couple of months, is pulling together all the materials that we created. And I remembered when I was editing the last podcast that we have all the different prompts of different events which people wanted to run Age of Sigmar. Yeah. And I'm going to stick all of those in the back of the book of, like, basically, if you want to run something similar, here's 60 prompts that we have for games potentially. And maybe we could just pull from the hat next time. Because I do think we've done a lot of prep work for doing it again, and it would be a lot smoother, like, or at least we'd know what we're getting into, and like know how to cut corners and which corners you can cut and which ones you can't. That's the other thing.
Yeah. That's a good general advice as well, actually knowing what corners you can cut.
Yeah. I think this series of podcasts altogether as well is a good tip for anyone who wants to that was the point anyway, to be a little documentary of like two people trying to pull together a load of people to put on a narrative event and then doing it and then wrapping it up afterwards twice.
Yeah.
So,
and we missed a bit in the middle where we were both incredibly stressed with work and also with this.
Yeah, well, yeah, that was the thing. If you're actually really busy, you don't have time to podcast, and that maybe is a great summary of modern life.
That is true, yeah. Excellent. There's some questions answered. Questions from questioners.
From the
to step on other people's toes in their branding. Anyway, I think that's us done, isn't it? So
I think that's us done.
Thank you
this
for
is the end, Drew.
It is the end. And that is I'd like as our musician for the podcast series, could you do a This Is The End cover in a legally distinct manner, please, to start playing as we're talking?
I'm gonna preempt your answer. No.
No.
I'm not going to do that.
You're not going to do
that. That requires more work.
A one-note difference version of This Is The End. Anyway.
I straight up refuse.
It's time. It's time. Time to go. So thank you for joining me, James. And thank you for joining us, listeners. Goodbye, everyone.
Toodles.
Bye-bye. Thank you for joining James and myself, and we hope you'll join us next time on the Tiny Plastic People podcast. If you have any questions for us, you can reach us at thetinyplasticpeople@gmail.com. And if you want to see something of the event itself, James has produced a book about the event, which is available for download on thetinyplasticpeople.com. Cheerio, everyone, and thanks for listening. Proper Pope for that. One of the bullets that struck Pope John Paul II in 1981 was later encased in the crown of the image of Our Lady of Fatima in the sanctuary of Fatima, Portugal. That's anyone who ever doubts that 40K and the Catholic Church just aren't the same thing, that you have the bullet that injured a pope turned into a crown or added to a crown, which probably gives you a 4-up in Vunsave or something.